Hang on, Adam left us on a cliff edge and he didn't tell us what the end of the story was when he broke into that palace.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Tripology. I'm Alan and I'm here with the ever perspicacious Adam.
Alan, it's another one you're going to have to explain for me, mate.
Perspicacious, I have to explain. I can't even say it.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever even heard it.
Perspicacious. Well, it means someone with a ready insight or an understanding. But the reason I said it, I think, is because I'm perspiring and I'm thinking about perspiration. And it made me think of how perspicacious you are.
Crikey. So you're in a hot environment again, by the sounds of it.
I'm positively melting, man. I'm in Kochi in Kerala.
Right.
Maybe the hottest place I've ever been. I mean, I've traversed the Sahara Desert. I've been in jungles. I've done all sorts of very hot things. But my goodness, I just think it's a new type of heat. It's like if you go out between the hours of 11 a.m. up until 5 p.m.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like your body evolutionarily is not equipped for what is bearing down on you in the form of an exploding star outside of the orbit of Earth.
That's so hard for me to imagine. It's just intolerable. Just completely, you know, are you sort of questioning why you would be in that part of the world at this moment in time? Is it that hot?
I'm questioning why I've chosen to manifest in this reality as a human being. Human beings being so ill-equipped to deal with this sort of terrible, terrible heat. Yeah, I'm really questioning just life, the universe and everything.
Jesus Christ. What does one sort of do in those temperatures? I guess you just hang tight until the evening, right? You just stay in a cool environment, try and get some sleep in the day, I guess. It makes you pretty tired. You don't do anything outside, I assume.
I've tried stubbornly to traverse the external world during the day, but I mean, every time I'm hoisted by my own petard, I'm drenched in sweat. It's difficult. You really, I mean, hostels are full in the middle of the day, which is such a rare thing in the travel realm. Going out into a common room now, you'll see several sweaty foreheads peering into laptop screens. No one can do anything but just stay inside and seek the refuge of an air conditioning unit.
God, and I don't really know much about the weather or the conditions at that time of year, but now you're entering into Indian summer, is that right?
Yeah, exactly, which is kind of why I'm south, so we're actually just exiting kind of the winter months, which is the only time that you can sort of traverse the south of this country at all.
Right.
And I'm sort of heading north now where it's going to get cooler and cooler as it gets hotter and hotter in the country. So I've timed it quite well.
Nice one. Nice one. And you got plans to move north, I know.
Heading slowly north, indeed. Yeah, I've enjoyed the south. I enjoyed the fact that it connected into Sri Lanka so nicely. I've enjoyed the fact that there's so much nice surfing and beaches.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm ready to explore the northern territories, the northern cultures. You've got, you know, Mumbai, and then you've got Rishikesh and Punjab regions and all these sorts of things. It's going to get all eclectic and unusual and brilliant. So I can't wait.
And as we heard on a previous episode, Nightmare Night Bus in India. Go back and check it out if you haven't heard that episode yet. You're not opposed to night buses and trains given your recent experiences.
Yeah, and there'll be some long ones coming up as well. To traverse from the south to the north and then onwards up north, I'll have to be taking some long old journeys, trains and buses. So stay tuned. I mean, I can't help but notice you've chosen to question me, a man whose brain is melting under oppressive heat. So let's ask you some questions. What's going on in your life?
Yeah, big stuff, man. Like I just spent the last 3 weeks, as we know, in Spain and Portugal. I had an amazing time. And it's like, I wanted to talk to you about this for a long time, actually, because I think we've kind of alluded to it on the podcast a few times. And it's also stuff that we talk about, not just as close friends, but also as fellow travelers or backpackers, is trying to squeeze trips in where they don't fit.
Yeah.
And I feel like even though Portugal and Spain was that for me, I still wouldn't change it for the world. Like I genuinely had a really, really good time. And there were a few places that I went to that I've wanted to go to for ages. So I'm trying not to look back and think, you know, did it really warrant a 3-week trip in Spain at this time in your life, because I'm spending lots of time with family, which is amazing. But I just needed to move out of the UK in the nicest way possible. It was very difficult for me living in North America and then coming so close to mainland Europe, being in London. And, you know, it was just very hard to sit still, mate. So
totally. I empathize with that feeling, man, because when I first went back to the UK after such a long time away, the only way that I could actually stomach that feeling of going home, and I really didn't want it to feel like the cessation of travel, like, oh, that's it, I finished traveling now, got it out of my system, I'm going home.
Yeah.
The only way I could stomach doing that was I booked a flight to Senegal whilst I was still in Brazil. Like, I needed to know that there was a way out prior to my return. And I think that's something that a lot of travelers can empathize with, this idea of like, oh, I'm returning now, I'm finished. And avoiding that feeling kind of is of the utmost importance, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. And there's going to be people listening to this, of course, that are based in the UK, or people that are based in any country for that matter. And maybe that's the country they're from or the country they've chosen to live in for a long time. And I never want it to come across like life in the UK is not palatable. But for someone like me or like us that is used to moving every now and again and living a life on the road, as it were, it can be quite difficult to adjust. So whether it was like a trip extension or whether it was me justifying it because I really wanted to go there, I'm not too sure, but I had an amazing time. And I would like to share a little story from that trip with you now.
Yeah, I want to hear that story. Absolutely. I can't wait. But just touching briefly before you embark on this new adventure, can we talk a little bit about that thing of returning home? Because we covered it, and I think some listeners maybe will perceive that you were there for quite a brief time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you got everything there was to get out of that time, out of it, and that was why you kind of felt the need to move on so early? And was it kind of what you were expecting, or not quite?
I could have stayed there for a very long time. I mean, I had an amazing time in Seville and also in Lisbon. And I also, in everywhere I went, I had an amazing time. I also had a really wicked few days in Porto, and that was punctuated by lots of eating and drinking because of, I don't know if you know, but the wine industry, the Douro Valley, port wine, this kind of stuff. Obviously, there was an added layer of interest there for me, but I tried not to do too much. So I spent 6 days in Lisbon. I spent 4 days in Porto. I spent 6 days previously in Seville as well. And then I only had probably 3 weeks to play with before I would start to feel guilty about the fact that I was in Europe and actually not seeing my family after, you know, three and a half years. So I would say that the way that I would answer your question, mate, is that I think it was a perfect little taste of what life might be like in that part of the world, you know, which is kind of maybe not the sole reason why I went there, but I wanted a little taste of what my life might be like if I lived in the south of Spain, or maybe I did a stint in Lisbon. Who knows? I think that geographically, it's a very interesting area. Certainly professionally, it's a very interesting area as well. And I went there with an open mind and tried not to plan too much. And I initially was only going to stay in Lisbon for 3 days and loved it so much, I stayed for six, and I could have definitely stayed there for months. So if we treat it as kind of a little taste of what life might be like there in the future, then it was perfect. But I absolutely could have stayed there much longer.
Yeah, it's so interesting that human beings are these plant-like things in some ways. The second you repot them somewhere, which is any modicum of good, there's enough sunlight, water, and food for you to be nourished. Like, we start casting roots so deep into the soil that it's very, very hard to start moving again. I think that's like a common theme I meet with people who just go traveling a bit, and then the first thing they find, which is good, they stop immediately because it's good. And I understand it. Their soul's being nourished. They're feeling like they've found that thing, and then that thing wears off, and then they move over to the next pot. And it is a real philosophical challenge. I want to discuss that a little bit more on future episodes because I have some rampant views on that specific topic at the moment, sparked by a couple of different things. So we will put a pin in that and tell me your story.
Yeah, it's that is a really interesting topic, and I love talking about it. Obviously, we're quite biased, I would say, but I came out with a nice little soundbite when I was walking down the road at 2 a.m. I was speaking to a friend of mine that I met when I was in Porto, and we were talking about the amazing people that you meet when you go traveling. And I said, you meet amazing people when you travel because amazing people travel.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I don't know whether me pining over the experiences I had and the people I'd met is really a good use of my energy, because if I didn't meet them, I would have met other people. And if I lived in Lisbon or spent any longer there, maybe they wouldn't have been there, but other people would have been, who would have been amazing as well. So, yeah, I think that amazing people travel, and the fact that we sort of form part of this community and get to mix with so many like-minded people is magic.
Yeah, and talk to that community via the podcast. We love it.
Mm-hmm. So, mate, I've kind of been putting off this story, and I haven't relived it, shall we say, because I'm a little bit embarrassed by it, to be honest. It's very out of character.
Really? Okay. Well, characterly, I define you as being quite valiant, quite intelligent, insightful, kind, friendly, and this is against character. I can only assume you're a right bore in this story.
Yeah. Would you categorize me as law-abiding?
Yeah, I would say generally quite law-abiding when you're not zipping around Canada in your souped-up automobile.
So, bit of a strange one, but down in Lisbon, or down in the south of Portugal anyway, sort of west, northwest of Lisbon, about an hour away by train, there's a place called Sintra. It's a town called Sintra. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Right.
But the reason why so many people go there, the reason why so many tourists like to go there, is because there are lots of really impressive kind of palaces and other regal buildings, old castles and this kind of thing. It's actually been designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site, the whole town.
Amazing.
Incredibly hilly.
They're always up to no good, aren't they, UNESCO? They're always designating things and completely changing the touristic landscape of a location.
Completely, yeah. I wish they could have changed the fucking weather, because it was pissing it down. But the buildings are beautiful. I mean, it's strange, because even though they seem like they were built in the same era, architecturally, they're all very different. They're really impressive. Some are these grand sort of chateau castle-esque buildings. Others are much more quaint sort of, palaces or where the king used to live, his final residence, as it were, the last king of Portugal, if I'm not mistaken. Don't fact check it. But yeah, it's just very quaint. It's lovely to walk around. But there is real tourism there, right? There's lots of tuk-tuk drivers and there's lots of buses, and things could be very expensive if you're not prepared to walk. Given that it was raining, I was umming and ahhing about whether I should walk or not, but I went for it because I'm a bloody cheapskate.
Yeah, man.
And there was one very specific thing I wanted to see. I didn't have much of a plan. There was just a few buildings, a few sort of complexes, if you will, that I had picked out. And it is possible to get to about three or four of them in the day if you go to Sintra early enough and then hot foot it around, or get a tuk-tuk or private driver, whatever. But it can get pretty expensive, because the ruins and the castles you're walking around, I mean, I don't think any of them are cheaper than 10 or 12 euros entry. And if you want to do a few in a day or over the course of a couple of days, those entrance tickets rack up, right? So there was one that I picked, and it was this old sort of palace with walled gardens, lovely big complex. You could walk around there all afternoon, and then you can walk through. There's a chapel to see, and sort of lovely tree-lined streets and cobbles, and it is honestly really, really beautiful. I'm hesitant to share the name, but maybe I'll put that in the description after I've had a think.
Okay, if you have a change of heart.
But there's one really, really cool, I think, architectural feat that they've achieved. And it's essentially a well. It's basically a spiral staircase that goes all the way down. It goes down like four floors, maybe even longer.
Okay.
Or deeper, and you can look over the top, and when you're at the bottom you can look up. It's aesthetically really pleasing. So it's kind of this like stone, stone spiral staircase type. It almost looks a little bit like a prison or a jail type thing, like a turret, the inside of a turret. But I saw it on Instagram, lo and behold, and thought, oh God, that's there. Okay, well, we'll try and see that then. So there I was walking towards the complex, and after a while I got to the main gates. Obviously there's floods of tourists, there's loads of sort of officers herding people like cattle into different queues to buy different tickets for kids and families and whatever. And tuk-tuk drivers and private drivers are turning up in their droves.
Yeah.
And then I looked on the map, I was on Google Maps, and I could see that there was another little path. If I carried on walking for a couple of minutes, there was this path that had actually been noted. It had a name. I can't quite remember the name, but there was a little road, and it went all the way around the back of the property, zigzagged through a load of, you know, some areas or whatever. And then I could see that the path brought me out really close to where this well is. And I thought, oh, I wonder if I can just miss all these tourists. And so I'm sure there's going to be another entrance into this complex right by the well. So I don't have to, you know, combat all these large groups of people. I'll just go down this side road and have a little wander. So don't worry, listeners, I've taken videos of all of this. So even though I might not be able to describe exactly what I'm talking about, I have got footage of the entire journey.
Okay, it's documented, there's evidence.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was like an old... It felt a little bit like England, actually, because I was walking down this really tight alleyway, like a corridor, with big stone walls on either side, and they were covered in moss. And because it was raining, it was really wet. And it felt, you know, I'm going to use the word enchanting, but can you kind of picture, like, the light wasn't coming in? That's got you.
Yeah, it's taken from a book of some sort, you know?
Yeah, completely. I was expecting a little pixie or a gnome or a fairy to jump out from behind a rock, but
nice. Like it.
Yeah, I had to watch where I was going, and you see on one of the videos I almost fall over, but the rocks are really wet and they're covered in moss and it's a little bit muddy, and I'm kind of trying to find my way down this little corridor, and I walk for 5 minutes and 10 minutes and, you know, 20 minutes. I think this is a really, really pleasant experience. It's a lovely, lovely walk to do, and I would recommend people doing it. However, the purpose of me doing it was to try and get closer to this well. So every now and again, I was looking down at my phone, trying to find out where it was on a map. And then I got to a point where I thought, surely I've been walking long enough now. And I looked at the map again, and I'd already gone past it. So I thought, oh shit, if I've gone past it, that means there wasn't an obvious entrance. So how the fuck am I going to get in? And I looked at my phone, I kept my phone out, and I waddled all the way back to the point where the well was, and stood in front of me was this like 8 foot tall wall with barbed wire around it. And I thought, oh, that's a shame, because it has taken me about 20 minutes to get here. And now I'm exactly where, you know, the well is, the thing that I really want to see. It's literally the other side of this wall.
Yeah.
And I can't get in. Amazing. So I was scratching my head and I was thinking, what are my options really? And then I walked a bit further down, back the way I came, and there was one section of the wall that for some reason didn't have barbed wire on it, and it was a little bit lower.
Nice. This has shades of me and Emmy sneaking into a festival.
Yeah, maybe that's what inspired me, but you can kind of guess where I'm going with this, can't you?
I've got three guesses, yeah.
Go on.
Each more unlikely than the last.
Well, I'll put you out of your misery. The trouble was, I could run and jump, sort of, you know, put my feet up the wall and get my hands on top and pull myself up. However, the only dangerous thing was, on the opposite side of the wall, even though the wall was slightly lower, it actually dropped much further on the other side.
Yeah, because it's a well.
No. So I wasn't jumping straight into the well.
Right. But the well's proximal to the wall.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was a hell of a drop. You might not do it. Like, it was that high where I thought, if I break my ankle, I've just got no excuse, right? I've tried, what I'm saying is, Alan, I've tried to dodge 12 euros at this point.
Yes.
And I'm contemplating breaking into this complex and endangering my own safety.
I think that this is like a common, people might not know, but this is actually a common thing in the, there's a certain subsection of the travel community that often tries to get into attractions and little things for free.
Yeah.
I first encountered it in Leshan in China, where a Portuguese girl staying at my hostel insisted that there was a way to see the large Buddha at Leshan for free if you like burrowed underneath the fence on the north side.
You're joking.
Yeah, so there is, it's a thing.
Okay, well, I think, I don't know if I'm just trying to, you know, help myself with this statement or whether I'm in denial, but I feel like my trip took that shape because there wasn't an obvious entrance. Like, I was prepared to pay. I just didn't want to be with all of the other people at the gate, right? So I managed to get on top of the wall and I thought, God, am I really going to do this? I started feeling guilty. And then there was no one around.
It's always a bad sign, isn't it, when you start feeling guilty.
Yeah, completely.
Always suggests that something's not right.
You know, a million things running through my head. And I thought, oh, just, you know, fuck it. Who cares? Just jump in and see what happens. So there I swung my leg over the wall and chucked myself off the wall. And it was quite a far drop. I mean, I would have said I was in the air for at least a whole second before I hit the ground. And they're dumped into a sort of bush, and this French couple came out of nowhere. They were like, oh, I was like, shit.
Were they part of the enchantment?
No, I mean, they quite clearly see me just jump straight down into this bush, and I kind of dusted myself off and then just tried to act normal, like you can even do that after you've just broken into somewhere, right? And all these thoughts just started, I just started to feel really guilty, mate, and I didn't know how to behave. I was even thinking, should I take my hat off and maybe change my sweater? And
you were feeling guilty just the fact that you got in without paying at this point?
Yeah, I felt really guilty because if anyone came up to me and asked, this is how crazy it is, mate. I even thought, God, I hope this doesn't come back on Tripology. Like, I hope there's no way that I get found out and then I have to leave Portugal and it just, you know, snowballed into this.
I'm much more badly behaved than you when I'm traveling, I think, then. That's very moral of you. Very nice that you felt so guilty. But I mean, it's just, ultimately, it's just a little bit of, it's cheeky more than it is criminal.
Oh, I hope so. I do hope so. But there was part of me that just wanted to walk to the front gate and own up. You know, just come clean and say, look, it's not what it looks like. Well, in actual fact, it's exactly what it looks like. I climbed over the wall, but I'm prepared to pay on the inside. Is that a possibility?
I didn't know you were so such a stickler for the rules.
Oh, I think quite famously. It's something that defines me back in the UK, I think, among my friendship group. But yeah, it was, I ended up, mate, just having a wonderful afternoon walking around the complex for completely free. However, I was stressing. I really was. Every time I saw someone who worked there, I thought, oh my God, how am I going to get out of this one? I should probably just tell them.
We've got to work on that. Next time I see you, we're going to sneak into some stuff.
Okay. All right. I think the listeners will be quite pleased to hear that.
Yeah. I think so. We'll go on a little mischievous adventure. And let me talk about some more mischievous adventures after a brief meditation break.
Oh.
And there we are, our conscious mind returning into our brains. I was a little bit cooler, actually, without my conscious mind. When I was meditating then, I felt some relief from the intoxicating heat in here, but now you know, it's nice to be conscious regardless of the heat situation. Adam, we have a lot of items on Tripology, some famous ones: rice for breakfast, we've got Alan's miscellaneous travel item, we've got hostel common room, but scarcely has something been so requested by the listening audience than an item that we like to call Tripological Reasoning. Play the theme music.
Tripological Reasoning. Tripological Reasoning,
driving me insane. Oh, what would you do?
Tripological Reasoning, Adam, you see, is kind of a training program that I developed for you in order to make sure that you were prepared for traveling.
Thank you ever so much.
And now we've not played in a while and you're jumping over palace walls, you're sort of trying to get in places for free, you're a wreck of a man. So I think it's about time we set up another training experience for you. We played Tripological Reasoning, in which I give you hypothetical travel scenarios and you tell me how you'd cope, how you'd respond, what you would do.
Well, my moral compass now is maybe better aligned now that I've got that off my chest. I feel a little bit better, a little bit mischievous. It's definitely not something that I'm proud of. However, the fact that you've been so understanding, I'm now in a better headspace to answer these questions. So these are things that you...
Well, that was my first... That was my first tripological reasoning was, you want to get into a palace for free. You see a wall. But we'll axe that one this week. We'll go straight to the second hypothetical situation, which is you're on a multi-day hike.
Okay.
Beautiful scenery, wonderful surroundings. You're going from place to place. You're hiking many, many, many miles in between. You stay over in a small guest house. And then set off about your day. You're with a group of people, you're all hiking, and you get 5 miles down the road, only to notice that one of your most important travel items, your headphones, you've left them under your pillow. Ooh. In the guest house. What do you do?
So they're definitely gone, right? You've searched everywhere you would have put them, and you absolutely have not got them.
Yeah, you can actually open the case of your headphones and the case is there, no headphones inside. You know, and you have that, you know, as soon as you do it, you know, and you're like, I left them under my pillow. I know that.
Oh, okay, fair enough. How big's the group of people?
3 close friends.
I'm asking to borrow their headphones immediately, I think. but is that an option?
Well, yeah, you can borrow their headphones, but more concerned... Like, you're probably not going to wear the headphones on the hike with your friends anyway. I'm more concerned with, like, are you writing your headphones off, or are you, you know, what's the play?
Yeah.
You're only 5 miles away.
I'm not going back for the headphones. I'm not. I mean, if they were really, really good studio quality, you know, the sort of stuff that we use to do it.
They're not.
Then yeah. I mean, they're so cheap to buy, aren't they, in the right store. I think you might not get the same level of quality, but 5 miles is a long way, mate, when you're walking.
Yeah, it's a long way. Okay, so you're borrowing a pair of headphones when you need them, and then you're just repurchasing a new pair of headphones next time.
I think so. Well, because you've got to think about what the alternative is. That's a 10-mile round trip to collect the headphones.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well,
so
it's an option.
I mean, I like walking as much as the next guy.
Okay, well, as always on tripological reasoning, it's a scenario that happened to me. Do you want to hear what I did?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
I got to my next location, rang up the guest house and said, listen, what are we going to do? I left my headphones under a pillow. He said, no worries, mate. I'm coming to where you are in a couple of days. Actually, the next day he brought me my headphones free of charge.
Oh.
Stunner, hey?
What an amazing guy.
Yeah.
That might be the best possible outcome, because you were obviously carrying less weight because you forgot your headphones.
Yeah.
So you were more sort of streamlined on the walk.
I left my dumbbells with him the next day as well.
Yeah, you couldn't just bring my backpack while you're at it, could you, mate?
Oh, I've misplaced my dumbbells. Can you bring them to my next location 20 miles down the road?
That's awesome.
Okay, yeah, there we go. Tripological reasoning.
Oh, that's win-win-win.
Would you like another?
Yeah, go for it. I'm ready.
I've got one more for you today.
Love it.
Okay. You're on a night bus, Adam. And like so many night buses, this one, it gets you into town at 3 a.m.
Okay.
So you maybe expect it to be a bit later. You're hoping for a sort of a 7 a.m. arrival. You were going to explore a little bit and then you're going to check into a hostel. You've arrived at 3 a.m. You've got no data on your phone, and you, like, there's all the hostels and hotels that you go past, they're like shut, locked doors. There's no way you're getting in any of them. It's kind of sketchy. It's not a particularly safe town, but it's not that unsafe. It's kind of a middle of the road vibe, and it's pitch black. What are you doing?
Oh, okay. Nowhere to stay. I mean, the bus shelter, is there some action around the bus shelter? Are there people there? At least some lights, maybe some warmth? What's, you know, I probably would try and hang it out until the morning if I felt comfortable.
There is no bus shelter. You've been dropped off on the side of the road, and that's like the worst place because there's like a million taxi drivers that want your business. You know, they're trying to take you to your hotel or something. You could maybe chance your arm and let them take you somewhere, but...
Bit of a risk, isn't it? Bit of an added risk. No data.
Well, I don't know. You definitely could go in a hotel that way. You could definitely just beholden to them. get a taxi to a hotel and let them charge you what they would and negotiate it accordingly.
Yeah, sure. I would... 3 a.m. It's like right in the middle of the night, isn't it? A couple of hours either side. And
yeah, it's annoying time, isn't it?
Yeah. I might do that, you know. I might. It's hard for me to visualise how dangerous this place is. But hanging out until the morning... Because, you know, you've got to think about what else there would be to do there. Just keep on a bench. Doesn't sound too safe. Stay awake. Then, you know, you ruin the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe swallow the cost and try and get into a hotel that's maybe a little bit more expensive than I was anticipating.
Nice. I think it's a smart option. Yeah. I found a police station and slept outside a police station. Kind of, I thought that was the place that seemed the safest.
Right.
This is in Ecuador. I pulled up alongside, I saw the sign saying police. There was a little nook in front. I put my bag on the floor, bundled myself up under some clothes and tried to sleep for a little while to limited effect.
Right, yeah.
I maybe got a couple of hours though.
That's funny that you're using the police station as sort of protection.
Yeah, even though the police station was also closed.
Surely they got to have some active CCTV cameras around this bad boy.
Yeah, maybe. I was nervous though. I was actually quite nervous. Every time a car drove past, I sort of stirred and kind of lay low. I was behind a little wall.
You should maybe start practicing what you preach, because it sounds like your special move is getting a bus to a location right in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
That arrives when there's nothing to do and nothing's open.
I always anticipate that it will take longer than it does. But I always check as well. Even that bus, it was supposed to arrive 4 hours later than it did. I was prepared to arrive in Baños fairly later. But yeah, there we are, 3 a.m. That's 5 hours really until the next cafe opens. It's a pretty brutal time.
Yeah, but I mean, what do we do with this information now? Do we say, well, you were fine, so it will be fine? Or do we encourage people to get buses? If you're going to get a bus or a train or whatever, maybe get one that arrives at a reasonable time so that you aren't pooping yourself until the sun comes up.
Well, listen, Tripological Reasoning, it's an educational tool to some extent, but you don't always have to do as I do. Look, with the headphone situation, that was a stroke of genius. You know, that is what you should do in that situation. Move on and call.
Agree.
Squirreling myself away into a police station, I'm not sure it's like the best spoke thing. I create the simulation and you come up with the solution. You know, I'm just making you aware of a variety of situations. I'm not necessarily saying that I've always chosen the correct one.
If in doubt, do it for the story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'll say this. If you're going to commit to being completely bedless for a night,
yeah,
a police station's probably one of the safer places. I perused the local park and I perused. I looked down next to some of the other homeless people and thought, maybe I can come here. And they seemed scornful. So I chose the police station, the one place where the local Ecuadorian homeless would truly never sleep.
Well, yeah, I think that's an intelligent choice. I think you did the best with what you had, shall we say. And, you know, talking about doing it for the story, for all those listeners that are thinking, well, hang on, Adam left us on a cliff edge and he didn't tell us what the end of the story was when he broke into that palace. Well, it's a massive anticlimax. I had a nice afternoon and I saw the front door. I was stressing about walking out of it and I just walked out as if I'd paid. So that was the end.
You've very much given the audience a sort of Tripological Reasoning in form of your earlier story, haven't you? If you are desired to go to a palace and yet find yourself short on cash, why not hop over a quick wall? You'll probably have a lovely afternoon all the same, even if it is wrought with anxiety.
Yeah, there was two things about that, right? Is that I don't know how cheap the ticket would have had to be before I just paid the price, right? Like if it was 10 euros instead of 15 euros, would I have gone, oh, that's fine, maybe I won't risk breaking my ankle by jumping over an 8-foot wall?
But
the other thing is arguably I enjoyed it more because it was free.
I think that's definitely a factor. Yeah, I think all these things are relative.
Yeah,
it's all relative, you know. For me, I think that's a lot for a palace, but I ain't seen the palace. Perhaps it's an absolute beautiful cacophony of architectural wonderment, and if so, $15, oh, it's not so bad. But, you know, only you can be the judge of what you did was moral and ethical. And we'll let the audience be the true arbiters of that for you. If our listenership falls falls off the edge of a cliff next week will know it's because they've judged you very harshly for your behavior in that palace.
However, when I post those photos and videos on the old Instagram at Tripology Podcast, then they'll be able to see just how beautiful it is, but equally just how shit the weather was.
There we go, at Tripology Podcast. And that's on all social media. You can go to youtube.com/ Tripology Podcast, and you can email us all kinds of little things. Oh, I had a thought and feeling. I think I might be in love with Adam. That's one little email that you could send. Oh, Alan, when you're in a shower, do you always wear flip-flops, or sometimes do you just take the athlete's foot on the chin? That's another email you could think about sending. Lots of different things. All to tripologypodcast@gmail.com. I don't know about you, Adam, but I think it might be time to embark, to fly away from this week, from the present, from the oppressive heat. And are you okay? Is everything all right over there?
Take the athlete's foot on the chin.
Yeah, take it on the chin. Hey, we've got a lost and found section that comes after the episode. You can find that on patreon.com/ Tripology Podcast. Let's go there now. Are you ready?
I'll see you there. I can't wait.
Bye.